tonight we're doing part three of our marriage and family life series. It was really just going to be two parts, but we, you know, there's so much to talk about. But tonight we're going on a field trip to the mikvah at 7:30. So we have to finish up by then, finish the talking part by then, and then we'll see the mikvah. We can continue talking, of course, and asking questions then. So looking at your sheets, I just want to buzz through very quickly. So we have two words that are basically for review. So the first one is, purpose of the world is pleasure. The purpose of all creation is pleasure. And so we talked about that at length, so I'm not going to go back on that. But the purpose of this world that we're in, this phase of it, this physical planet that we're on, and being a soul living in a physical body, the whole purpose of that is transformation. To transform yourself, to make something out of your soul, right? You're a soul before you come into your body. When you die, you will shed your body and still be a soul. So the essence of you is soul. So the question is, why are you wearing a body for 90 or 100 years in a physical world that's going to end? What's the point of that? So we talked at length last time about the point of that, but the point is to transform your soul. It's not to leave the world as a better place, although that's a nice thing to do, but the world in the end is going to end. So really, in a way, and I don't mean this quite how it sounds, but who cares what the world is like? So we care because we're shepherding it, but in the end, the world's going to come to an end. So it's not about leaving the planet a better place. It's about how do we interact with the planet, with each other, with ourselves, with God, to leave ourselves a better place. Right? It's about transformation of self, transformation of soul, of that part of ourselves that's eternal. So I don't think I mentioned this at the end of last talk, but when we looked at the biblical verses, which you probably don't have anymore in front of you except for those who have a notebook, but in the Hebrew, the last part, in English it says, therefore the man shall leave his parents and cleave to his wife and they shall become one flesh, right? So in Hebrew, it says, v'hayu l'basar echad. Basar is meat, right, or flesh in this case, so you should become one flesh. I'm just going to close the door. Glad you're here. Before I close the door. So we talked about how you can revowelize and repunctuate Hebrew to mean something else, right? So the purpose of the Jewish people, right, the purpose of all human beings is to transform themselves. What's the specific purpose of the Jewish people? Who knows? Good, to be a light unto the nation. So what does that mean?
An example.
Good, exactly. That is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to lead the way. Not that we're better than the other nations, but we're first among the nations. So we're compared to the almond tree. The almond in the orchard blooms first. All the fruit trees bear fruit, but the almonds bloom first. So it's not that everybody doesn't give fruit, that all the nations don't have the opportunity to produce goodness, to produce their fruit. It's just somebody has to show how to do it. And that's the job of the Jew, is to show how to do it. We are supposed to be a light unto the nations, to be the example, to lead the way. So we're supposed to, we have our mantra, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And we're supposed to live that mantra, showing in everything that we do God's oneness. So, and we talked at length last time about the sexual experience being the holiest possible activity a person could engage in on this planet. Sorry, you missed it. Right? You'll have to listen to the recording. But it brings together everything that we talked about, the emulating of God, the giving, the free will, the using the physical to achieve the spiritual, that the mitzvah of having marital relations at the right time, which we'll talk about more at the mikvah, but that mitzvah is bringing together every aspect of our humanity to emulate the godly so that we are leading forward, bringing everything together as one. It's the physical embodiment of our mantra of God is one. It's becoming one with that. Remember, we were created as one, divided into, get back to one. Right, that was the process. So getting back to that one is the physical embodiment of our mantra of becoming one, of expressing that God is one in the planet. So really, the job of the Jew is to be that expression of God's oneness. It's a complicated topic, and it's much deeper than it sounds, but even the suffering, even the difficulties, even the expulsions, even the horrible things that we've been through as a people, ultimately is to show in our flesh, in a way, that God is one. A long topic, we're not going to go into it, but just file that in the back of your mind. That the whole thing, if you look at Jewish history, anybody who's learned Jewish history can see already, even again, without going into all the complicated parts, but clearly it's a miracle that we're here, right? A total miracle. Actually, it's a perfect thing to talk about right now, because it is Hey-Iyar. Today, the 5th of the month of Iyar, which is Yom Ha'atzma'ut, this year it's celebrated tomorrow on the 6th of Iyar, because they didn't want to, always before Israeli Independence Day is the day of remembrance. And so since today should be Independence Day, that makes yesterday a day of remembrance, which means it starts right after Shabbos, and they always have ceremonies, so they didn't want to cause anybody to break Shabbos to set up the ceremonies. So they pushed it off a whole day so that it would be, the night would start last night so they could have Sunday to set up. And so today's Remembrance Day, Memorial Day for the fallen Israeli soldiers. And starting tonight and tomorrow is Israeli Independence Day. So, but Independence Day, what's that about? Total miracles. Just think about the fact of your existence right here, that you're sitting at a table right now as a Jew in 2011 in Denver, Colorado, means that if you were born Jewish, that means that for 3,500 years, in every single generation, your family chose in and wasn't killed. Both. You had to physically survive and spiritually stick with it for 3,500 years. That's the only reason you're here today. That is a total miracle, right? There's a lot of people, it is a burden in a way. It is, actually. I mean, it's an amazing thing, but that you carry such a majestic history is empowering and a burden at the same time. It's you have a noblesse oblige, you know, you're... So anyway, the concept of us being the carriers of the word that God is one is in that verse too. They should come together as one flesh, v'hayu lebasar echad. You can also read it as v'hayu levaser echad. They should proclaim God's oneness. They should be bearers of the news, b'sarot tovot. I'm sure you've heard b'saros tovos. Right, you say that when you leave a shiva or whatever, we should hear good news. You know, b'suros tovos. But that b'suros means to give news. It's the same root word, though, as basar, flesh. So the phrase is the same, v'hayu levasar echad, v'hayu levaser echad. So through that act of coming together and creating oneness in the sexual experience, in marriage, we are privately sending the message that God is one in this world. We are the bearers of that message. Okay, so now let's look. Let's just go buzz down our list because we have 15 more minutes here before our field trip. Tuma and Tahara are two very important words for our discussion on mikvah. So we talked about this whole amazing sexual experience and what it could be and the holiness that it brings into the world. But in order for that to happen, there's a container that holds the whole thing. And the container that holds the holiness of the sexual experience is the laws of family purity. So family purity, it's a bad translation. Family is correct, purity is incorrect. It's called Taharat HaMishpacha. I put it at the top of your paper. I use this slash, the ST slash T, to show letters that are, could be Shabbos, could be Shabbat, you know? So you'll hear it both ways, Taharat HaMishpacha or Taharat HaMishpacha.
One is
Ashkenazic guess, yeah, pronunciation, right. And one is Sephardic or Israeli pronunciation. That's why I wanted to give you both. I use both. I go back and forth with my pronunciation. So, anyway, so it's Taharat HaMishpacha. So the Tahara here is translated in English as purity, but we don't have a word for it in English, and that's what's important to know, because it can become very confusing when you see biblical translations in English where it will either call it cleanliness or purity. Either one, when you put it in the opposite... So then when you talk about tuma, which is the opposite of tahara, means unclean or impure. So neither of those work at all for what we're talking about. But we don't have the concept at all in English, so it can't be translated. So those are the poor translations, but I want to try to get to what the meaning actually is a little bit. So tahara is the height of spiritual connectivity. And tuma is spiritual disconnectivity. Both of those things are on a continuum. So the most tamei thing is a dead Jewish body. And I don't know if there's a most tahor thing on the other end of the continuum, but let's just go to the dead Jewish body for a minute. So dead Jewish body, what is that? the human being that has the most potential for holiness is now dead, which means it has zero potential. But the tuma is an expression of the vacuum that's there. What could have been that isn't anymore. So there's a vacuum. The greater the potential for life, the greater vacuum there is. So it starts with a dead Jewish body, goes to dead non-Jewish body, and then goes all the way up to a bug that you slapped on your wrist. Right? But a death energy is what's connected with tuma, a loss of life potential. So anything from a tiny little bug that doesn't have much potential in the world, except maybe to, you know, either share diseases like a mosquito does, or to feed birds, whatever its job is. We do need mosquitoes for some reason in the world, even though we'd rather not have them. But anything from that all the way to, there's all kinds of levels in between of all kinds of different tuma. And tuma comes from the leaving of a life energy from a physical body. So if that's what it comes from, so then it has to do with other things too. Seminal emission causes a tuma because there's a life energy that exits the male body. A period, losing an egg, causes, that's a life energy that leaves the female body. It doesn't have to do with the blood, it has to do with the exit of the life energy. There are a few things that are outside of this category. For instance, the red heifer. The red heifer is a conundrum because its job is to make tahor, to bring that spiritual connectivity back to a person who's come into contact with a dead human being. And yet the person who actually prepares the cow for the ceremony becomes tamei in the preparation of the cow. So that's one of the things that doesn't have to do necessarily with the death energy, why there's tuma. Another one is the person, you know, there's two goats on Yom Kippur, one that gets sacrificed inside the temple and one that's sent off to be thrown off the cliff, right, to goes to Azazel. The person who walks that goat, doesn't even touch it, but the person who accompanies the goat to the top of the cliff also becomes tamei. So I'm not exactly sure what those anomalies are about, but in general...
You mean permanently?
No, he can restore it. All tuma can be changed back into tahara. So tahara and tuma are the nouns. Tamei and tahor are the adjectives, just so you know. So tahor is the adjective for tahara. Tamei is the adjective for tuma.
Tahara is connected.
Connected, spiritually connected, right. So in order to enter the temple and to do certain types of work, you have to be tahor. So anybody, even somebody who like killed a mouse in their house that day, can't go to the temple that day. First the sun has to set, they go to the mikveh, and then they're good to go. But if they came into contact with a dead body, 7 days have to pass. Red heifer ceremony, then go to the mikveh, then good to go. So depending on the type of tumah, there's a type of restorative ceremony.
Do they really have red heifer ceremonies?
The red heifer ceremony is, yes. That ceremony is, you find the red heifer, which we don't have today. It's a miraculous birth to have every single hair be red and not any of them to turn, and for that animal to never have been put to work at all. And then it's killed, ritually killed, and then it's completely burnt. I don't know the whole ceremony. And then the ashes are mixed with water and the water is sprinkled. But that makes a big supply of sprinklings for many, many different people. So I don't know how often you actually have to find a red heifer. I'm just not sure how long it lasts, but I imagine it lasts a long time. The person who does the sprinkling, though, becomes tamei. And the person who gets sprinkled becomes tahor. But it's a lesser tuma. The sprinkler gets a lesser level. So the one that you're sprinkling on who came into contact with the dead body has the 7 day wait, plus the sprinkling, plus the mikvah to get
tahor. What about the women that prepare bodies for burial?
Right, they become tamei mate. They would not be able to perform temple service for 7 days. So women don't do a lot of temple service, but there are some things. They can't even go into the temple for 7 days.
What about the man?
Same thing.
Body.
Same thing. That's why Hanukkah, that's why the oil had to last for 8 days, because everybody had just been in a war. So everybody had come into contact with a dead body, whether they touched one or they were in the vicinity. All the laws of Tuma and Tahara are very complicated. Very, very detailed and very, very complicated.
So what do they do today?
Today we don't have the temple.
Okay.
So we don't have to worry about it at all today. Okay. That being said, we do still worry about Tahara we still worry about Tahara specifically for going into, we talked about extensively last time, that what do we have today instead of the temple? In terms of the physical location where Kedusha, where holiness, is created and sent out into the world, what's the main physical structure that happens in? Where? Our homes.
But is that why you stay at home those 7 days for mourning?
No. No, that's a different thing. Seven is a big deal in Judaism. Seven is a complete cycle, a complete natural cycle. That is a good question. No, our homes are our mini temples. And our bedrooms are the, remember? Holy of Holies, right? So if our homes are the holy, the temple, the sanctuary, our marital bedrooms, where the sexual act takes place, is the Holy of Holies. It's the most sanctified thing that you can do. So all the laws of Tumah and Tahara don't pertain without a temple, except in our temple, in our Holy of Holies that still exists today in our marital bedrooms. Before we can be that spiritually connected with our spouse, we need to have that level of spiritual connectivity. That's where the laws still pertain today. So that's where you don't have to worry about the Tumah of a dead person. That does not apply to sexual relations. But the Tumah of a period does apply. So that has to be lifted first before sexual relations can take place. So that's where the Tahara comes in that we're going to talk about tonight. And that's why we have mikvahs in every Jewish community. You'll find a mikvah because that's where it really applies today. So this body of laws is called Taharat HaMishpacha, family Tahara. Not Taharat HaIsha, it's not about the woman. Isha is woman. And it's not about the couple either. It's not called Taharat HaZug, the couple. It's called Taharat HaMishpacha, family Tahara, because the entire family lives inside the Tahara that's generated by proper sexual relationship between the husband and the wife, without the family knowing anything about it. Again, it's not a secret that you have sexual relations, but it is private. Nobody needs to know when, which is why women go at night to the mikvah, not during the day. Nobody needs to see. And that is a place where women are allowed to tell white lies also. Somebody says, oh, you're going out tonight, where are you going? They say, I have a staff meeting, I have PTA, whatever. You don't have to say I'm going to the mikvah. And you don't have to say wherever, because nobody needs to know, right? So you are allowed to cover that up. That is private information, nobody needs to know. But the Tahara energy that's generated by the observance of these laws and by that physical relationship, okay, no problem, is an energy that the entire family lives inside. Vibrationally, it contains the entire household. Okay, so we said that this world then is for transformation, and we said the next world is for pleasure, so that the sexual relationship, then the reason why people desire sex so much is because they are geared towards the next world, to that world of all pleasure, and you do experience a taste of the next worldly pleasure in the sexual relationship. So if that's the case then, and this is the world for transformation, where do we taste transformation in this world? And that's the mikvah. That's why the mikvah is the key institution. After the home, mikvah comes next, before a synagogue, before a Sefer Torah, before a place to pray, before anything else. The next structure that's built after a roof over your head is a mikvah. Because the mikvah that creates the transition experience that is the underpinnings of constant renewal of the Jew. That's part of the secret of the Jew. How are you here after 3,500 years? Your family chose and chose again and rebuilt itself and rebuilt itself again. Everybody comes from a family that was kicked out, that was brutalized, that was transferred, that was moved, that had to leave, that was expelled. Everybody. There's nobody that's free from that history, right? How are we still alive? And how is our amazing country at only 63 years old, right? 63? I think that's where we are. 63. Look at the amazing stuff that's coming out of Israel. Because we are renewers, constantly thinking new, thinking out of the box, thinking again, looking at it again, looking at it from a different place of view. That's why we're compared to the moon. The moon looks like it disappears, but it's back again. That's the Jewish people. You think we're down, we're not. We're back again, and we're back again, and we're back again. We renew and renew and renew and renew. And part of that is the mikvah. The mikvah is about renewal. Water, tell me where in creation, where in the 7 days of creation was water created? It was divided the second day. it's not talked about where it was created. Water was created before the creation story starts. So the fluidity of water and the fact that it can take any shape, the fact that it was there before everything, says something about the nature and essence of water. So water is necessary for life to exist. It had to be there before. So it was shaped, it was divided during the creation story, but it had to exist before. So going into the mikveh, and we'll see that the mikveh is connected. I just want to keep my hand on the clock here. See that the mikveh is connected to a bore. The bore is a pit in the ground. So that's what makes it from a swimming pool into a mikveh. Mikveh has halachic requirements. It has to be at least 40 measurements, particular measurements of water as a minimum. And then it has to be connected to the ground, and the water has to come from something that was never contained. So you can't carry it in a bucket. It can't come in through pipes. You could carry it in on boards, snow, on boards. Or it can come, there can be a special channel where it comes through rain. I'm not exactly sure how you make it, but it has to be that it was never contained, that it's alive water. Because that water, once you go into it, you're touching the primordial waters. So the idea is you take your physical body, you immerse it into something that's not part of this world, that was there before this world, and you come out born again every single time you go. You come out renewed, different perspective, transformed.
So is there different water for each person?
No. Same water.
And they don't put chemicals in it.
Yeah, you can put chemicals in it.
So it's
nice and clean. Plus, you have to be scrubbed spotless before you can go in. You exfoliate, you have to spend at least a half an hour soaking, and you are shiny clean, nothing on you. If you were painting, all those little speckles of paint have to come off. If you were peeling beets, you got to get all that red dye off. If you were, nail polish comes off, contacts, eyes, everything. Whatever you have, your earrings, everything comes off that can come off and come out. You go in shiny, shiny clean as you can make yourself, possibly. So you go in nice and clean. And it's not that it's enforced, the law. The whole reason you're going is to make a total contact with the water. That's why you go shiny clean, because you want total and complete contact with the water. So you don't want anything that would reduce that contact, because you want it totally and completely immersed in those primordial waters and then come out renewed. So I do have to go.
So you had your own swimming pool?
Won't work. Has to be a mikvah, right? Okay, so we're going to go very quickly because it's time for us to go. Vicky's going to meet us. So we're going to the mikvah. Nida is the state that you're in when you get your period. Tvila is dipping in the mikvah, and there's three reasons for using the mikvah today. And with that, we're going to go, and then hopefully we'll get to talk about the rest. Today we go for conversion, so it's transition from non-Jew to Jew. So it's needed for that. We go for nida, so it's transition from not being able to have sex to being able to have sex. So if you're not married, you don't have to worry about this.
So what's the definition of nida?
The nida is the spiritual status that one enters when they begin their period until they go to the mikvah, whatever that is. So let's say a 12-year-old, she gets her period, and then she only gets married at 20. So she first goes to the mikvah 20. From 12 to 20, she's a nida, which is fine. It's not a spiritual disconnectivity that affects prayer, that affects ability to do other things. It affects your ability to have sex.
But is that because you're tumah during that?
You are tumah during that time.
Because of the death of the egg?
Because of the exit of the life force.
So when you have a child,
there's an exit of, yes, you also have to go to the mikvah.
Are you still nida though?
Yeah, because it exited you. The life force left your body. The egg also leaves alive.
But it's life, it's not.
Yes, but a life form. But you're left empty of it. Right? So inside you, there's a vacuum of the spiritual energy that was there. The life energy that existed when the child was inside you is now gone. So for a boy, it's 1 week, and for a girl, it's 2. Because not only did she leave, but she took her ovaries with her. So she leaves a double life vacuum.
When you say it's 1 week, it's 2 weeks, what do you mean?
You have to wait after birth. You actually have to wait a little bit longer. Yeah, it's technically 1 week for a boy and 2 weeks for a girl. It's actually longer because you also have to wait for the bleeding to stop. So let's say by a miracle the bleeding stopped on day 6, you could go on day 7, but according to biblical law. But okay, we're going on a field trip right now because I don't want to keep our docent waiting. So you can leave your stuff if you want. Take your wallet, I guess. But leave your notebooks. And we're going to walk over to the mikvah, see it, and come back.